episode 204 of Smart Enough to Know Better.
We are a podcast of science
and comedy
and ignorance.
I'm Dan Beeston.
I'm Greg Waugh.
And in this episode of Smart Enough to Know Better, I'll show you something even better than a silver bowl.
And Guru Greg will help you achieve your goals.
But before we get there, what happened to you, Gregoire, this week in science?
I was looking at some space stories, which I know is something I do. You know, that's what I do. Ooh. And and I read a lovely little story about how the Milky Way's supermassive black holes, or the big supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy, Sagittarius. The hub, yes, yeah, is rotating. We knew that. And it's rotating probably at its maximum speed. So there's an upper limit to how fast it can rotate.
Wait, when you say it's maximum speed, why can't it go faster?
Well, that's a good question. So in the end, it starts breaking down the laws of physics as we understand it. So there is sort of an upper limit to how fast a black hole of a certain mass can rotate. I'm not going to go into it here because it's long and it's boring, to be honest, but there is an upper limit to how fast these things can rotate. And the supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy is rotating at probably 96% as fast as it could possibly rotate.
And we're
pretty close.
We're orbiting around that.
We are not orbiting around it. It's not massive enough compared to, like, it's billions of stars, but there are hundreds of billions of stars,
right,
and other mass. So, yes, it is in the center. That's where it's fallen to, because that's where it would fall to. But we are going around the same point. I wouldn't say we are going around it. It's not like holding the galaxy together.
Right. So it's not like a solar system. Like, it's not like, because we orbit around the sun and the other planets kind of tug on us very gently.
Yes. But yeah, well, there's a lot more mass not in the supermassive black hole in the galaxy than there is in the black hole. It's we're in the sun. It's like 99 point something percent of all mass in our solar system is the sun. The supermassive black hole is not even 1%.
So in our solar system, it's kind of like there's like your dad and he's holding on to you and spinning you around on a rope. But in the galaxy, our solar system is kind of like, we've got a whole bunch of ropes to all the other people, and all the other people have a bunch of ropes, and we're all kind of spinning each other.
Yeah, things spin. Things actually do. Everything seems to rotate in the galaxy.
If it didn't rotate, it'd just keep running into itself.
If it didn't rotate, it
would keep, because rotating is when things keep missing each other. Because if you've got gravity, and you've got two things, and they just, and you just let them go, they're just going to go, and they run into each other. But if they miss each other, then they start to spin around each other, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. Why things will rotate is if you have lots of, let's say you talk about like the gas and dust cloud that our sun was made out of, all the bits of dust and gas would have had movement somewhere. And when you added up all those movements, all these little vectors, and add them all together, it would have had a vector, probably not, very unlikely that it would be pointing directly into its center. So on average, it wouldn't, that would be, well, because statistically very unlikely that at all the points it could be pointing at, it was pointing at the exactly, it could happen, and it probably has, the universe being very large and a lot of stuff in it, but unlikely. So what happens is you get this vector that points off to the side, and as it gets smaller, you pull in your, like, if you're a ballerina or a skater pulling in its arms, gets smaller and smaller, and therefore its momentum has to be maintained, and therefore it gets faster and faster. The smaller it gets, the faster it has to rotate. So you get these very, very fast rotates. Everything rotates. Our planet rotates, and our sun rotates, and black holes rotate. The whole galaxy rotates as well, because all these things will add together. So everything kind of rotates.
But, hang on. What about the universe? I guess that wouldn't make any sense because it's got nothing to rotate against.
Well, also it's not, the universe, as far as we understand, is expanding. It's not getting, so technically it would be slowing. If it is rotating, which I have no idea if it is or not, I've never actually even thought about that before. Good question.
It wouldn't make any sense to say that it rotated or not, would it? Because there's nothing for it to.
Well, no, because stuff inside, you could have a balloon. You could have a balloon full of water, and the water inside the balloon could be rotating.
But if there's no skin to the balloon, then and there's nothing else there except for the water in the balloon.
There is an edge to the universe. There is an edge because there has to have been some sort of edge, if, as far as we understand. It's just moving away very, 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 very fast.
But the edge isn't like a film. It's not a bunch of stop signs.
We don't know what that edge is. I mean, you could talk about the edge of a black hole isn't a physical thing, but you have the event horizon. Like, where is the event? Where's the edge of a black hole?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, a black hole
still rotates.
If there's the edge of the universe, it's rotating with everything else.
Yes, but hang on. What I'm getting at is, you could have water. In my analogy, if you had a rotating balloon, let's say the balloon is the skin of the universe or the edge of the universe, but it doesn't make any difference if the edge of the universe is rotating at all. The stuff inside, the water, can be rotating totally unconnected to the edge of the balloon. The water inside could be spinning around. It's like when you take a glass, an analogy for an analogy. Let's go two analogies deep now. So to explain my balloon, take your coffee cup in the morning and then swirl it round. The edge of the glass or the cup is not swirling, is not moving at all, but the water inside, the drink inside, is rotating around.
Now, if I'm inside the coffee, I don't see it rotating, but there's definitely going to be a centripetal force.
I see what you're saying, because everything's moving around, therefore what are you comparing it to?
The forces would be the universe, the sense that the universe is expanding. Maybe there is no dark energy. Maybe it's all just spinning, but along more than one axis. Like,
if only we knew some actual astrophysicists, professors, and what. Actually, we do. And they are very angry right now.
And they are already doing their email.
No, well, maybe not Dr. Natasha. I mean, Dr. Natasha probably can answer the question. But a bit of sizzle. I was hoping to get Professor Peter Quinn back on to talk about dark energy.
Not after he hears me talking about our spinning universe theory.
But this is I'm glad we're talking about spinning, because this is roughly where I was going. So I'm gonna drag it back, like black holes drag the space-time around it. Ooh. So what I was thinking about was, when things spin, because black holes, in the end, they can't fall apart. They're space-time. They're a singularity in space-time. But I think, the Earth can fall apart and planets can fall apart. So how fast could the Earth spin? And then I remembered that on the equator of the Earth, you're traveling at about 1,600 kilometers an hour, about 1,000 miles an hour, rotating around and around, just because the way it rotates once a day.
Yep.
And I did a little bit of searching of that. I was like, hang on, well, that means you're being pushed back. Gravity's pulling in, but the rotation is pushing out. You get a centripetal force.
Yep.
Pushing out. So I went and sort of looked into this. I went, well, how much does that decrease your effect, basically, on gravity? If you know what I mean. So these two vectors, gravity pulling in and pushing out. So it's not much. It's about 0.3%. Imagine the Earth is a perfect billiard ball, which it kind of almost is, very, very flat, actually. You'd be about 0.3%
billiard
lighter.
Billiard balls are rough in comparison to the Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. The Earth is very, 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 very flat comparatively. So you'd be actually about 0.3% lighter on the equator than you would on the poles due to the centripetal force throwing you out, basically, on the equator. So 0.3%, a very, very, very small amount. Divide your mass by 100 and then divide that by 3. So if you weigh 100 kilograms, then you're going to – wait, is that right? Yes, if you weigh 100 kilograms, then on the equator you'd be 300 grams lighter.
That's the weight of the original Game Boy.
There you go. It's almost like you're carrying an extra Game Boy on the equator. That's why all those people, they look so weighed down. Anyway, I was like, that's really interesting, because the 0.3, I was like, okay, that's small. And I thought, well, I know that other planets spin much, much faster than the Earth.
Some of them kick off.
They really, really, really do. So Saturn sort of goes round, rotates once every 10 hours, and it's huge.
Yeah, it's massive. 10 hours.
And so that difference is about 19%. So nearly one-fifth.
What?
So in our 100 kilogram person scenario, then if you're 100 kilograms on the equator of Saturn, though it hasn't got solid land, but you know what I'm trying to say here, then you would be 80 kilograms on the poles. But you wouldn't be, because Saturn has higher gravity. But let's not go there.
Why not? You'd end up being like 800 kilograms there and 1,000 at the other place or something crazy that, wouldn't
you? Yeah, I just didn't want our amazing listeners to write and go, well, actually, the gravitational force of Saturn is X, and therefore it's all right.
You can't stop them.
No, that's fine. We love them for it. I was just pointing it out. So my next thought was, well, okay, if you're standing on the equator of the Earth.
Mm-hmm. I've done that.
I've done it a couple of times. How fast would the Earth have to be rotating for the centripetal force throwing you out to counteract the gravity pulling you down? So you'd be weightless on the surface of the Earth. That took some maths. And suddenly all of my years of physics became useful. The first time in my life, Dan, I actually could go and do some maths for this. So
it's about 300 times as fast.
That's your guess. That's cool. That's fine. I like where you're going with that. So I'm not going to run through all the maths here. If people really want to, I could put it somewhere. It's not, you could work it out. And I think this is right. I've checked it. I checked my maths. So standing on the equator of the Earth, the linear velocity at the equator to counteract the gravity of the Earth would be 7.9 by 10 to the 3 meters a second. So you said 300 times more.
Mm-hmm.
The speed you're rotating right now at the equator is 463 meters a second. So this is 79,000.
Well, hang on. 470, you said 1,000.
463 meters a second, which is 1,600 kilometers a second, roughly.
Yep.
So this is 79,000. Yes, 79,000 meters a second.
Mm-hmm.
That is very, 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 very fast.
That's too fast.
That's far too fast.
That's too fast. I don't know whether those calculations are right.
I'm happy to be wrong, but I don't think I am.
Hello, it's Editing Dan here. Greg was wrong with his calculations. Everywhere that he said 79,000 metres per second, that should have been 7,900 metres per second, which is still fast, but it's only really 17 times faster than we're going now. So, you know, if we all put our minds to it. At any rate, I've trimmed out about 5 minutes of us arguing about mathematics. And any time Greg says 79,000, just replace it in your head with 7,900.
If we're busting around at 1,000 miles per hour.
1,000 miles per hour. Yeah, 1,600 kilometres.
Yeah, so about 1,000 miles per hour.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and we're getting 300 grams lighter for that. If we doubled it and we're going 2,000 miles per hour.
It doesn't work that way. You can't just double. So, hang on. We've got seven.
Because there's a circle.
7 times 9. So
stupid circles.
It's 7,900 meters a second compared to the 460 meters a second.
If you just double it, then the ground just falls away twice as fast. If you quadruple it, it drops away four times as fast, right?
No, we're not talking about that at all.
As I'm flying through space, as the planet is whipping me across its surface,
yes.
it's dropping away from me.
You're accelerating because you're going around a corner, basically. Yeah. It's the same speed. It's a curve. It's angular momentum. So and therefore you get a force on you. That force is driving you out.
If there was no gravity, I would stand on the ground and the ground as it rotated would drop away from me.
Why?
Because if there's no gravity, if Earth has no gravity, but it's still spinning and I'm on it, I just keep going in the same direction. If there's no gravity of Earth pulling me down, I just keep flying off into space.
Oh, okay. Right. Yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So
if you were suddenly shot away from the Earth, but there was nothing, there was no gravity pulling you down, you'd be like a cannonball flying off at that height and there's no atmosphere, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, the atmosphere would slow me.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, but I know what you meant. I know what you mean. Yeah, okay, that's fine.
If the gravity was enough to be 300, make me 300 grams, so the Earth is pulling me down 300 grams worth, but the planet is dropping away because you remember your 300 grams you mentioned before. Then I would be in orbit. Like, I could jump in the air and be in orbit around the Earth.
You wouldn't be in orbit. You'd be moving in a linear line. You've got rid of gravity. You wouldn't be in orbit around anything because there's no gravity to hold you.
If I add a little bit of gravity so that my weight is 300 grams...
Then you wouldn't have left the... But then you wouldn't have left the... You wouldn't have left the planet.
But if I sort of was able to step up a foot into the air, I would just sort of hover because... Because I'm 300 grams.
Oh, I see. What you're saying is if you're standing on something that was so small and light but was still spinning at the same, he's still the centripetal force pushing out, then this, it's a calculation we're trying to say, but on a smaller level. That's what you're saying.
Mm.
So it's the same. Yeah. Okay. So therefore you could have a lesser mass. I think we're getting very confusing. That's fair enough, but I will put them for people to look at and then people can argue about the maths. But
I am definitely going to have a crack at that.
But yes, it is. So to rotate, it would be 79,000 meters a second to totally counteract the gravity of the Earth.
And then if that was happening, I could sort of jump up into the air and then I would be in orbit.
Yes. Well, yes, you'd have no, well, once again, no, with no atmosphere, that sort of stuff. Yes. Well, even if you did have the
atmosphere would be going the same clip.
It would be pulling around. Well, that actually is the next point. I was wondering, actually, would it be possible for the Earth to survive?
Would it catch fire in the old atmosphere?
Well, the atmosphere, as far as I can work out, would just be flung into space. So it wouldn't.
It's not as heavy as me.
Because hydrogen can already escape. So if you started spinning everything up, it would just go, wait, we'd just lose the atmosphere very, very quickly. The oceans would redistribute all over the place. So we'd probably just lose a lot of that too, but it would just go over the lands. It would just go everywhere. And the Earth itself, because it would be squeezed. You had the pole, Saturn's quite squeezed at the poles compared to, it's like an oblate spheroid even more than the Earth. So all the mantle would push through. The structure of the Earth wouldn't survive, not even close. Like, it wouldn't even, you wouldn't even get close. You couldn't just rotate the planet up and get to that speed.
Would we lose the ladies first?
Would you lose the ladies
first? Yeah, ladies tend to have less mass than men. So, ladies and small men would start to drift upwards, but heavier people would still be on the planet?
I think the more problem would be the cyclonic winds smashing you to pieces and the mantle coming out of the crust like a fiery pimple and destroying everyone and everything well before your more obese cousin lasted on the planet longer than you.
But it's still interesting. I still get to rule the world for a moment.
As long as you eat all the pies, basically.
My logic doesn't come together there, because what I'm saying there is that the lightest person rules the world at any one time. But if there was like a big, massive guy who was also higher status and had more money, then I haven't thought that one through.
We're going to have to check your maths on that one.
Yeah, what a strange cognitive bias that was.
Only skinny people can rule the world.
Yeah. In my scenario, the smallest and most petite women are in charge, apparently.
Yeah, that's the big problem. That's what women are always saying, that they're always in charge. And damn it, they just want a day off of not ruling the world. Why does
everyone listen to me all the time?
They everyone's complaining about the matriarchy, the tiny, tiny matriarchy. That got weird. How was your week in science, Dan?
Gregoire, you may have noticed by the echo behind me that I have moved back into my home after...
I just thought you were just in your usual group of friends, the echo chamber that men find themselves in.
That would make sense, how I've managed to screw that up, but no. No, I'm not hanging with those fools. I have moved back into my home after it was flooded 20 months ago.
God, that's like, oof.
That's
like three dog months. It's crazy.
Three dog years?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I've never had any dog conversions.
Dog to man conversions. I had to throw out so much stuff, Gregoire. So many wasted resources. And so, in penance, I have reduced my carbon footprint.
No.
I know how heroic I sound. Gregoire, I bought a new razor.
Ooh.
It's a safety razor. It's a high-quality handle that takes cheap metal blades, so rather than throwing out plastic cartridges, I recycle a fraction of that waste. And those razor blades are almost 100% recyclable. Not like the plastic cartridge things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can... Okay, well, you're somewhat plussed. You're not completely non-plussed. Oh, well, no, that's not all, Gregoire. That's not all. Because I used to use baking paper when I was cooking to prevent the dishes from sticking. And now I've purchased a reusable silicone sheet that sits in the tray of my oven and resists the intense temperatures of the oven, and it makes cooking a tidy activity and a breeze to clean up. Pretty impressive reduction in my personal carbon footprint. Pretty impressed, Gregoire.
I'm very impressed. I'm very, yeah, very
that's
impressed.
That's right. That's right, listeners. I'm saving the world. Well, what is this absolute lack of enthusiasm from your end?
I'm just waiting for the point. I know there'll be some sort of rug pull. A rug pull. You like to pull the rug, Dan, out from under yourself. The only man I know who likes to stand on a rug and then yank it out from his own legs.
Some would say that that's how the flying carpet works.
Some would say.
I'm my own personal Aladdin.
Or the genie.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make me a Boo the monkey?
I grant my own wishes. Yeah, it does make you the monkey.
Ah, I do.
Okay. You seem really underwhelmed that I'm saving the world single-handedly.
Right.
By reducing my personal carbon footprint.
Sure, sure. I thought actually in the end it was just Mother Nature just reducing all your goods and chattels to mush that really kind of saved the world.
No, I had to replace them all.
But you didn't, though. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes.
I replaced them with slightly better stuff. But
oh, okay. One said, we promised that there were nothing but blood diamonds. Everything is made from blood diamonds now.
All right. There's one more change I made.
All right. Okay, cool.
To help save the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. I introduced a carbon tax on businesses across the country to make it economically imperative that they reduce their emissions.
Oh.
This change will reduce emissions by a substantial amount and pass the responsibilities to the entities that are actually responsible. Now he's impressed.
Well, I'm very impressed.
No, hang on. Sorry, wait. No, the LNP just repealed it. Damn it. I sometimes wonder how things like that, how helpful things like that would be. Like, what if the government gave you, like, everyone a grant or a subsidy to buy a new safety razor and maybe even free blades so that either you could get the funky Gillette ones that are, like, bad for the environment, or everyone is, like, pushed to do the slightly better thing for the environment?
I don't know how much it actually matters when you look at where these things come. I mean, everything can help and everyone, you know, everyone should do what they can do. But I think we have a very skewed idea of where most of the emissions come from.
Where the savings are going to be.
Yeah. It's actually things like agriculture and, you know, production of meat or just growing of plants. That's where most of it is.
Beef and dairy is where it is.
Yeah, that's, and your car and that sort of stuff. Even your car's not that high compared to, I mean, flights. These are all like they're big, but they're not that big. That's the problem. And your personal footprint is not that high. But your electricity is. I mean, in Queensland, especially where we live, it's massive because it's all coal power. That's real bad. So compared to only using a cutthroat razor the rest of your life, I don't know if it'll make jack difference. Though if you times it by 8 billion, then maybe it does make a tiny difference. So it's hard to say. And I don't know if it comes down to how much economic damage you would do stopping it, for the gain you'd get out of it, like giving people money and telling companies that they're wrong and shutting down certain things. There's always a time to do that, and you should definitely look at it. But I always wonder, what are you actually incentivizing?
Yeah.
But definitely, if you're a carbon-producing industry, then you should be paying to clean up your mess. In the same way that if I'm out doing face painting for kids and I use a spray can and I spray some kid's face and I actually get it onto your walls of your house, I should probably clean that up myself. you know, that should be part of my cost of, hey, buddy, you sprayed my kid's face. You also sprayed it all over my fence. Fix that frigging issue up. And I think every court in the land would go, actually, yes, Gregoire's face painting did that. You should clean it. If your job is digging this stuff out of the ground and selling it, then maybe you should be told to clean up the big mess that you made and don't just say, oh, well, don't worry. The people who use it will clean it up for me because they have no choice because otherwise everything stops. But the problem is, of course, that it's not something you can see. It's a gas that you can't see.
Yeah.
That makes it real hard. Yeah. Let's make it purple. Yeah.
That's
make it
why purple. You can get away with violent crime if you hit someone with perspex or glass. Like if you stab someone with a window,
if you
or no crime or, has been committed.
If you have an ice shard dagger,
the evidence counts.
If there's no body, there's no crime. I've heard this before. Like, you go, well, this person went missing. We blame you for murder. You go, well, where's the body? What's that bag full of seven bags full of human spaces? I don't know. It's like
you could make him if you could make the body invisible.
Ooh. It the whole world becomes a murderous tripping hazard.
Where's that kid with the spray paint?
He's the hero we need, not the one we deserve. Spray paint man, finding all my crimes, my invisible crimes, which aren't crimes until you point them out, kid. So who's the monster here? Well, no, still me, isn't it? Yeah, sorry, I murdered someone. Sorry, it is me. You're right. Also, why didn't I use my invisible visibility technology to create a massive industry and make a lot of money? Why did they use it for murder? That's dumb. Like, I could have used it for spying or for anything else, or lots of reasons. Does it only work on bodies? I could have created Gregoire Invisibility Inc. and being like a billionaire. I haven't thought this through.
It's all about money for you, isn't it?
It's all about murder.
So transparent.
Thank you for coming, Dan Beeston, to Gregoire's Meditation Center.
I am very delighted to be here. I really need this.
Oh, I'm very glad. As you know, I am Gregoire, your meditation guru, and I'm going to be leading you through your life goal meditation technique.
All right. I don't know what to expect.
Listeners. That's okay.
Great. I'm ready. I'm signed up. Let's do it.
Dan Beeston, you're here because, and anyone else who happens to be listening, you should be paying me, but that's fine. I'm going to allow this to happen. Then I want you to think of your life goals. So,
ooh, it's like the Headspace app. It's like one of those relaxation apps for our listeners. Cool. Lucky listeners.
So I want you to think of your life goal. That's what you've come. You want to realize your life goal, Dan Beeston. And I want you to focus that in your mind.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. So we've got that. You got that there. Now I just want you to relax yourself. Listen to the beautiful pan music or the meditation music that's now playing. How are you feeling?
I can't hear it. I can't hear any pan music.
I was going to say,
am I losing my hearing?
I was going to say, we'll put it. Look, we can't pay the microphone right now, but I thought we'd add it in post, but that's up to you.
But that's my job. I have to find pan music now?
I can find you pan music.
Oh, this is getting worse and worse.
All right.
This is mostly how these meditation things go for me. Oh, my God. A quiet mind is a terrible thing.
This is good. Everything is fine. Everything is great. I'm so glad that you've taken it down this road. I'm so happy that we have gone here. I'm showing a lot of teeth, not because I'm a chimpanzee who wants to bite you, but because I'm smiling, because we're happy. We're calm.
Okay.
We're happy. And you're thinking of your life goal?
Oh, yep. Got it.
Don't let that go. Good. Excellent. No. Now I want you to think of something that really infuriates you. As the death metal music starts to play,
do I have to find the death metal music?
Oh,
as well?
Yes, you will. You will, Dan Beeston. You'll have to find that death metal music.
That's my job that I've suddenly had to do, despite the fact that we are already into the next month.
Oh, I know. How does that make you feel? How does it make you feel, Dan Beeston?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to struggle with finding my angry thing.
Good, fantastic. So you're really getting the anger up now? You really get that you're going? You're angry about it? Are you getting in there? Are you got your life goal?
Actually, not really. I'm kind of just sort of resigned to it at this point.
Oh no, I need you to. What makes Dan Beeson angry? Oh, people aren't wearing face masks on buses, Dan Beeson, and they're coughing. Oh, you hear him coughing?
This. So stupid.
They're coughing on each other. Ooh. And look, and I'm not mocking you here. That's actually a really stupid thing people are doing. So yeah, I'm actually kind of irritated by
that. Oh, I only get angry at the stupid things that people do.
They're buying NFTs. People are buying NFTs, Dan. They're spending money on crypto.
That's so dumb. And now everything's got AI stuck on it.
Oh, everyone's excited about AI. I should have said, by the way, Dan.
Nonsense.
You haven't been talking to Gregoire at all. I'm actually Gregoire AI. Oh, ooh.
There is no way that Gregoire AI could be anywhere near this chaotic.
Anyway, the point of this is now we stop. And we stop, we bring it down, and thank you for coming to the meditation.
It's too late. It started.
That's good. That's where I wanted to leave you. Because research has shown, Dan
Beeson.
I'm going
to do the rest of the podcast and key it up.
Research has shown that if you want to get to your life goals, you shouldn't be calm about them. You should let some anger invade your life. So Texas University, which amused me when I realized it was Texas University that was doing this anger stuff.
Yeah,
They've been doing a meta study on...
Turns out, if you want to reach your life goals, you got to go out into the car park, fire in the air 6, 7, 8, or 9 times. That's what Carl worked out. He did the experiment every day for a goddamn week. And his goal was to get hit in the head by a fallen bullet.
So a lot of time we associate negative emotions such as anger as, well, negative, and we should always be calm and collected. But there's been some study that shows that those who get angry about a task to complete it, complete the task more readily and much more easily. Anger can be a positive motivator, even though it's considered a negative emotion.
That sounds like it's going to have side effects.
Well, yes, I'm sure, but we're not worrying about those. That's society's problem to clean up. But yes, using anger can actually lead to you achieving your life goals or any goal much more easily than if you weren't angry about it. If you're like, oh, whatever, I want to be happy about this thing. That's nice. But being angry about a goal means you'll probably work a lot harder at it, that you work to achieve it a lot more. You will probably cheat more. They do show that as well, that people will pretend they've reached their goal more than actually get to it. But anger can be a very positive, negative emotion when it comes to achieving stuff.
Sometimes when I fought with my girlfriend, I would go and do the washing up. I wonder if that's what was happening there.
Was that a life goal?
But it was for a goal for the weekend. I'm like, doing the washing up and doing a much better job because I was just really scrubbing hard.
I think we've achieved enlightenment. Thank you for coming. I will send the bill to your secretary immediately. It will be very large.
I'm getting charged for... Goddamn, I've got to go reach a goddamn goal.
I've got some pots in the kitchen that need doing if you'd like to go work on those.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
I don't like you much now.
Yeah, that checks out.
Actually, I don't think it's weird at all. When I read it, I was like, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Of course it does. It's anything that keeps you focused on what you're trying to achieve. I went, yeah, well, yeah, it makes sense to me. Whether that's like, oh, I really want it, or I will cut a bitch to make that happen. They're both leading to the same place.
Yeah. Like, is the anger in some way related to the thing that you, to the goal? It's like, I've got to get this done because it's got to be done.
Yeah.
Or is it just like, I hate drivers. I hate the commute. And you just come in and just do amazing filing.
Yeah.
That sounds.
You have to channel, I guess if you're just a generally angry person, then that may not help. You've got to try and channel it into achieving your goal.
Like, I can understand if your goal is to, like, abuse your spouse, then...
That's a life goal? Good
like
Lord.
Like, or drive your kids into a dam. I mean, you know, people have different goals at different times.
Wow. Oof.
But, yeah, there's a lot of different elements to this that... This raises a lot of questions. Well, we've avoided it for as long as we can, listeners. it's time to talk about someone we've avoided mentioning for as long as possible.
Is it Santa?
It's time to talk about Donald Trump. Also officially known as the 45th President of the United States of America. He's unofficially known by a number of other titles, but we are not going to stoop to such juvenile behavior. So we will only be referring to him by his official titles as allocated by the US government.
Okay. All right.
All right. Inmate P01135809 has various properties where he lives. Mar-a-Lago at Palm Beach, which incidentally, Gregoire, has the only 6-diamond rating with the American Academy of Hospitality Sciences.
Oh, my God.
Now, do you know what sort of science is practiced in hospitality sciences?
Home economics.
I don't know either. I don't know. But perhaps we could ask one of their board members. Let's pick one at random from this list. Oh, this one might be knowledgeable. He's called Inmate P01135809. Perhaps we can contact him and ask him what sciences are practiced at the American Academy of Hospitality Sciences. But we're not here to discuss Mar-a-Lago. We're here to discuss his abode at Trump Tower, specifically his toilet. Now, what can you tell me about Trump's toilet?
Supposedly it's plated in gold.
Oh, I heard it was a solid gold toilet.
There you go.
Now, I have a new toilet myself.
Ooh, la-dee-da.
Ooh, la-la.
I've pooped on a toilet before.
Indoor plumbing.
Ooh, I've used a toilet twice today. Look at me.
Now mine is
not a
porcelain.
Gold one. Mine was just porcelain.
Porcelain. Mine's porcelain.
Yeah.
Its flush mechanism is the pinnacle of human design. It requires no electronics. It's served only by a gravity water feed. And when you flush this thing, it sounds like there is a jet engine pumping the waste away. It is super cool. Now, toilets traditionally are made from porcelain or ceramic. These materials are extremely durable. They are completely non-porous. They can handle a ton of weight. If you're sitting on a toilet, you should feel reassured that it's not going to fall apart under you. They are also extremely easy to clean.
Not many young men would know that. I think there's a fear. It has to be really strong because you're sitting on it and you don't want it to break, but you also don't want it to stab you in the bot. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's really kind of like there's a fear of like being like stabbed in the anus.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to sit on like on a glass toilet.
No, you have to be like a Perspex one.
Yeah.
I'm sure people pay money for this. I'm sure that must be a thing. Don't look up on the internet, everyone. Don't do that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oof. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about plastic toilets in a moment.
Why don't they make them out of concrete? That'd be cheaper than porcelain. Surely you can just get concrete toilet.
Scratches still. Like, it's sort of... It can scratch and...
Scratch what?
The concrete. The porcelain is very very hard.
But why don't you... Oh, so you still damage it. Oh, okay.
You still damage concrete.
Right.
People do it all the time with skateboards.
That's damn them. Damn them trying to poop in my concrete
Pesky
toilet.
Kids.
It's like Tony Hawk coming over to my toilet and just doing ollies on the edge of it. God damn it, Tony Hawk. Stop it.
But porcelain, easy to clean. Certainly if you had a toilet made out of carpet, that would be harder to clean.
It'd be like a dog's butt.
Ew. Well, those are self-cleaning.
Well.
Kind of.
You can clean it the same way. It's fine.
Now, there are two other substances that are commonly used for toilets. They are plastic and steel. Now, plastic toilets are often used in mobile situations. Porta-potties, camping toilets, things like that. Now, porcelain is hard but brittle. It doesn't scratch easily, but if you drop it, it can shatter. So plastic toilets that move can be dropped or bumped without disaster, and they weigh less.
In the Matrix movie, when Morpheus is fighting Smith and he smashes Morpheus's head into it, that actually is vaguely accurate then, because he smashes Morpheus's head into the toilet bowl and it breaks because it's brittle. It should have smashed his skull, but it's a program. We're fine with that. But that toilet could break. But if it was concrete, Morpheus would just be dead.
Well, someone punched concrete girder. There's a lot of concrete exploding under fists.
That was
Smith.
That wasn't Morpheus' head. Morpheus' head went through. That explains why he lived. There you go. Because his head went through a porcelain bowl.
Concrete. See, concrete gets little imperfections in it, doesn't it? Like, it's harder to mold.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess you do it.
Yeah.
I didn't find any information about concrete toilets, though.
Hey, listener, do you have a concrete toilet? Get in contact with us.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up.
Sorry, I'll stop mentioning it. I apologize.
No, it's cool. I love it.
I just think there are different sorts of concrete. There's sort of, you know, sidewalk concrete, which would be awful, but there's also, like, really building industrial concrete like that.
Really refined stuff.
Yeah, and you have polished floors of concrete. People spend a lot of money making a polished concrete floor.
Yeah.
You can make concrete toilet.
Well, there's an act. There's a project.
There's a Smarter the Better produces polished concrete toilets.
Yeah, I'll look that up.
Smarter the Better is a new business, the Brick Shit House.
Well, it would certainly last longer than, it might last longer than a plastic toilet. Plastic toilets are not going to last you dozens of years. They get scratches and those tiny imperfections can catch mold and waste, making cleaning them a lot harder.
Yeah.
So our other sort of toilet is stainless steel toilets, and they tend to be used in prisons. Now, if porcelain toilets are so great, why do they use stainless steel there, Greg?
So you can't smash it off and stab a guard with it.
Damn, it really bothers me that you intrinsically knew the answer to that. Wow,
all I have to say is everything around me is a weapon. That's all I'm going to say, Dan.
Wow.
Everything around me is a weapon.
Ah, and that, listeners, is why we now record remotely. Okay, so, prisons can have a lot of violence in them. They don't want items in there.
Especially when I'm there.
Whew. Yeah. You're not trapped in there with them.
Yeah, that's right. I'm teaching them how to kill each other for a small fee.
Yeah.
That's not how the quote goes. That's fine.
Who watches the clock, man?
Hang on. Who clocks the watchman? It's me.
Yeah, that means you bang. Wacko. Yes, they don't want any items in there that can become sharp and or heavy.
Mm.
So if you smash a porcelain on the toilet, it becomes a cornucopia of weapons.
Mm,
So stainless steel toilets, strong, hard, impervious to shattering. They don't react with water nor the waste, so they will last ages.
Not just prisons. You also get them in public restrooms as well because for the same reason. You don't want anyone smashing them or breaking them or running off with them or whatever. So,
correct.
Yeah.
Now, the only problem is that metal is an excellent conductor.
Woohoo.
It takes the heat in your thighs and buttocks away. So this makes the experience of sitting on it distressingly cold, which most people don't like.
Once again, it's not really a problem because I don't sit on the porcelain. I sit on a toilet seat. But in a public place / prison, you don't be able to rip something off and beat someone to death with it. So you can't have that.
Toilet seat, no.
Yeah. So that, but most toilets, let's face it, you're not sitting on the porcelain at all.
No.
Therefore, you can have a shaggy dog or toilet paper or rubber or whatever you want, weird crap you want to put on there.
But not with a solid gold toilet.
Ooh.
Because a solid gold toilet obviously would involve all parts of the toilet because it's solid gold. You wouldn't want a plastic seat on a solid toilet. That would ruin the effect.
Good point.
Ruin the effect. Okay, so let's look at this solid gold toilet and see how it compares. Solid gold is non-porous. You can store water in it.
Mm.
It is also inert, so it's not going to react at all with the water.
It'll be the toilet that the cockroaches poop in after nuclear war.
Yeah. Unless prisoner 01135809 is forming a combination of concentrated nitric acid and concentrated hydrochloric acid in his gut biome.
Mm.
And I wouldn't put it past him. Now, gold is malleable. Malleable? Malleable?
Yeah, sure.
Malleable. It's easy to scratch or blemish. This makes it a haven for mold and other biology. So a solid gold toilet would actually make it very hard to clean.
And have a very low melting point or relatively low melting point too.
Yeah, no, don't eat tacos. Like when he goes to Taco Bell, he has to use a different toilet.
He's a very rich tacos. Man. I'm sure he can have multiple toilets for different meals.
Yeah. It is also very heavy. You would need to make sure your bathroom was heavily reinforced to install it, and moving it would be incredibly difficult. So, while a golden toilet is very ostentatious, I would suggest that if inmate P01135809 prefers the cooling sensation of gold, perhaps he would be better off using a prison toilet. I wonder if anyone can help him access one. Now, Gregoire, this has been a wonderful little flight of fancy, but I need to be serious for a moment.
Okay, yes, yes.
Inmate P01135809's gold toilet is a myth.
Oh!
While he has several absurdly ornate toilets, none of them are solid gold. Mm. There is, however, a famous solid gold toilet that is from a Hong Kong jeweler's residence that is linked to in the show notes. It was made as an art piece.
I have seen it. It's in the Guggenheim Museum.
Ooh, there might be a second one.
Oh, maybe a second one. Okay, that's maybe
a different one. Maybe that's a different one. Yeah. Maybe that is it.
And I remember that very clearly because there was a big sign saying, "This is not a toilet. Go to the bathrooms down there." And I stood there going, "No, it is a toilet. I know what you're saying, but no, that is a toilet. You shouldn't have written, this isn't a toilet." Now it seems like now you made it more of an art piece by saying, because it is a toilet. It's obviously a toilet. What they're saying is, please don't poop on our art.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a different thing.
What they need is another piece of art that says, this is not piped.
Yes.
Or in French, ce n'est pas le pipe.
Very weird.
Really happy with that.
Now I want to know what alloy, a gold alloy or another alloy you could make that would look like gold but be warmer on the buttocks.
You could heat it.
Well, yes, you could heat it. But once again, you don't want it to be – you have to be careful because gold is very conductive of electricity as well. So if something goes wrong, you're going to zap your anus. I just wonder if there's something that wouldn't be as thermally conductive, a less thermal conductive material that looks like gold, an alloy of some sort.
Yeah.
And still have the golden sheen.
Most metals are pretty conductive. Are there metals that aren't conductive?
Well, yes, but no. Well, there'll be less thermal conductivity for some than others. More metals.
Yeah.
Metals. Nothing as good as, you know, rubber or plastic or, you know, porcelain. But porcelain's also cold. Porcelain, if you sat directly on porcelain, you'd know about it.
That's go, true.
That's cold.
That's true.
We sit in a plastic thing. Well, I do, because I'm poor.
Gregoire, I want to tell a quick story about a couple of chemists in the Philippines.
Aw.
So,
are they in Corazon, love?
They are in love.
Oh! I'm very happy about that.
So, Corazon Erica May Itang works in a lab, and part of her job is to analyze various samples. Her lab mate passed one to her and asked her to run it one morning. She established that it was a synthetic peptide, a short sequence of amino acids. Mm-hmm. The sequence of amino acids were methionine, alanine, arginine, more arginine, tyrosine, methionine, and glutamic acid. After her initial shock, she rang another chemist across town and told him, "Yes, of course." The symbols of those amino acids read out MARRYME.
Aww.
Her boyfriend, who was also a chemist, had approached Thermo Fisher Scientific to synthesize the peptide.
Aww.
And they were like, "Well, we're not going to stand in the way of love. We're not even going to charge you for it." And they put together a synthetic peptide.
Aww.
To surprise her.
That's lovely. And one day it will get somehow into the human genome and turn into a cancer. And
that would be horrible if it was like, if that's how the zombie apocalypse started.
The marry me zombies.
Yeah.
Marry me. And all these men going, "I knew it."
Tongue out, looking to spread it.
That's a lovely story. I shouldn't make fun of it, but that's a very lovely story. I do think it would be much more funny if he was just sitting there and he gets a phone call from his lab partner who's like, "Yes, of course I will." He's like, "What the hell?" It was just a random chance.
That is one hell of a random
And he just
chance.
Runs with it. He's just like, sure. Of course I meant it. Oh, God, I can't say no now.
Yeah. That's what we call romantic chemistry.
Oh, it's Very good. That's very good. That's very good.
Welcome to the Walk of Shame. Woo-hoo. This is where we have already made the mistakes and then you, the listener, point them out so that we can all learn as a group.
Hey.
So I got an email from Michael Barnes and it sounds like listening to the podcast isn't great for his health. Now, Michael knows a little bit about chemistry, so he listened to me describing elements that are inert as matter that does stay whole and be better matter, and it's giving him a nervous tick. I said chemistry works because when you bring each other together, and he finds it so darn vague that it's impossible to give me a walk of shame for what I said. Like, I didn't even approach anything that he could actually say was wrong.
Sure.
It was ostensibly gibberish. Got it. I described that phenomenon as not sharp enough to cut myself. The thing is, I stand by calling inert elements like gold and helium good at being matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because you take a look at nobelium or einsteinium. Would you describe those as being good at being matter?
Well, I'm assuming they break down very quickly because they're probably very, very, very large. Yeah. Well.
I would describe them as being terrible at being matter and far too eager to become energy.
Yeah. Well, yes, and or other bits of matter. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And
well, then into some other matter which is better at being matter.
No, exactly. That's what chemistry is. That's what chemistry is. Chemistry is about giving up those electrons that you don't want or getting electrons that you desperately need and then hanging on. So you're not good at by yourself, but you're good with someone else. There you go.
Well, Michael points out that I was probably trying to talk about the octet rule.
Ooh, yes.
Have you heard of this?
Yes. Go on, though.
Many elements have an outer shell of 8 electrons. They can have only 7, so if that occurs, they are more reactive because they can react with something else that has a free electron and take it from them. Now, if that's something like potassium, it only has 1 electron in its shell. It loses that electron and the shell breaks, and like a Kinder Surprise egg, the treat comes out. Now, gold is inert, but it has an outer shell with only 1 electron. Other elements should be able to yank it off gold, but gold is packed in tightly. It's really hard to bump that electron off because all the other gold is in the way. There's some relativistic stuff going on here too, which we shy away from on the podcast. Yeah.
Yes, it does. Gold, the reason that gold isn't as reactive is more relativistic based than it should be based on its chemistry. Yeah.
Which I guess is why all of those alchemists were like, this should be easy.
Yeah.
I should be able to do this.
They didn't know what electrons were. They were just pissing in the wind. They had no friggin' clue.
All right.
Not even like those idiots like Isaac Newton.
What a knucklehead. What a dunderhead. What an average human being.
Average human being. After creating calculus and splitting light and then he's just ballsed up the last and also shitting on Leibniz for many, many years. He basically did nothing with his life. What an idiot.
Anyway. Yeah.
That just goes to prove that you do your best work when you're young. When you get old, you get cantankerous and just yell at someone a lot. So shut up, Dan.
And then fall in love with a pigeon. Okay, so Barnes goes on to say that you, Gregoire, were not quite vague enough when discussing sodium and chloride.
Right, yes.
You said, that's a different bond. A covalent bond.
Hang on. I think I said that's a different bond. That's a covalent bond. I think there was a way I said it. I think
that is the way you said it.
Yeah. Okay,
and cool. he is impressed at your vocal range, but has to draw attention. He has to draw attention to the fact that sodium chloride is not a covalent bond. It's an ionic bond.
Ah, bugger. Okay. I'm a physicist. All this is nonsense, garbage chemistry stuff. So I don't hold by this nonsense at all.
Well, this is the most physics part of chemistry.
Yeah.
So are you able to explain ionic bonds?
I'll let you do it.
So that means that there's one metal and one non-metal, and they've got opposite charges that are drawn to each other.
Right.
So it's not the electrons and stuff. It's like the charge. So they're like, oh, I'm a bit positive. And I'm like, I'm a bit negative. And they're like, let's fuck.
It's a very strong, the covalent bond's a lot stronger than the ionic bond. That's what I do remember from old chemistry stuff.
Cool.
Am I random? Yeah, I'm pretty certain. Or maybe Ionic. Maybe. I can't remember. I don't remember. Anyway.
One of them is stronger than the other.
Walk of Shames and Walks of Shames. As I said, I'm interested in what's going on inside the nucleus and what's produced. Not this electron cloud nonsense. Rubbish.
All right.
Garbage.
I mean, it all sounds like the same stuff.
Hush your whore mouth.
It really does sound like...
Be quiet now.
There's overlap between these two things.
No, there's no overlap. Look, there is.
There has to be.
There is. There's definitely overlap.
Just the universe.
But chemistry is just where things get all messy and goopy and blah.
You don't have to pour anything out. You just have to count things.
You have to lick it. Well, I'm not a vampire. You don't have to throw rice in front of me and I have to count it. Good Lord.
Oh, don't tell vampires about atoms. They'll be there all day.
Maybe that's why crucifixing stopped them. Maybe they're like, ha, take this crucifix. Ha, I will count the number of atoms in this crucifix. 1, 2, 3.
Was it you who came up with the conspiracy theory that vampires invented the welcome mat? Is that where I got that from?
I don't think so, but I do like the idea of it, yeah.
All right. Another walk of shame. Jess writes to tell us that the Statue of Liberty is not the name of the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, yes. Okay, right. Ah.
Its name is Liberty Enlightening the World, or, as it is a French sculpture, La Liberté Éclairant le Monde.
Look, sure. Technically correct, best sort of correct, as we say on the podcast a lot.
Love it. But, thank you so much, Jess.
But we... also have to go with the idea of you don't get to pick the name. The name is what something's called. For example, the creator of the picture type GIF called it GIF. And everyone in the world lost their fucking minds. Went, no, it's GIF because we've all decided. But they're wrong because it's GIF because the guy who created it says GIF. But I'm told I'm wrong because the creator of the GIF doesn't know what he's frigging talking about. It's obviously a GIF. So it's what people call it, not... what people named it. So, yes, the Statue of Liberty may be the Statue of Liberty, blah, 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 blah. Not Statue of Liberty, but it's actually the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, but I'm going to, but the thing is, I mean, obviously the guy who invented the GIF is dead now.
Is he?
As someone pointed out, he's with Jod now.
Ah, very good.
And language does change, but the name of this statue is probably on a plaque on the statue still. So you could call it the Statue of Liberty as much as you want, but you could also take you there and go, there's its friggin' name tag.
Okay. Oh, well, hang on. Counterpoint, in the center of our country, this big, wide, brown land of ours, well, not
is
of ours.
Is he a vampire too? Counterpoint.
Counterpoint. Sorry. I'm the most annoying vampire in the world. In the center of our big, brown land, there is a large monolith. And for the longest time, it was called Uluru. And then some white people turned up and said, we're going to call it Ayers Rock. And they put a dirty great plaque on it that said Ayers Rock. And now we still call it Uluru, but there is still a big sign saying Ayers Rock. So is it Ayers Rock? Is it Uluru? Names can change. You need to put a big plaque on something.
This seems more like philosophy than science.
It also feels like I'm walking you into making a racist statement, which I wasn't really trying to do. I'm backing you into a corner.
And the thing is, I'm just going to swim towards that. Like, you know that I'm self-defeating like that.
Yeah, it's true. Sorry about that. I think we should accept the walk of shame. I do accept it. It's not called the Statue of Liberty. It's called the other thing that I've already forgotten.
Could we call it Uluru's Rock?
Well, the Statue of Liberty, it's a bold choice, but I think we could go with it.
Also, it is not in the Hudson River.
Ah, crap.
As you proclaimed, it's at the mouth of the Hudson, but it's in New York Harbor, or, as it is a US water body, New York Harbor.
Wow.
That's my New York accent.
Wow. I think the New York bit was
good. Hey, look up there, it's Spider-Man. That's my New York. Yeah.
I think the New York part was all right. It was that harbour that I was a bit like, oof.
It's hard to do, and no one
in a Spider-Man movie has yelled at, "It's over the armor," or whatever. And you got, okay, I've got that now, thanks.
Because Spider-Man limited to the buildings.
Yeah, he is.
That's what I've been playing the video game.
He can hang over the Hudson a lot. He can go over the Hudson River on the bridges, and people go, "You'll fight one of us, you fight all of us." So that's something. But he can't go out into the arbor. The young one went out. The recent one, the Avengers one, he went out and held a boat together. And that was in the arbor, wasn't it?
New York Arbor.
But no one yelled at him. Iron Man just yelled at him for being a child, not for.
Do you do the huh at the beginning? The harbor? Because Americans, they hit the R really hard, but the New York accent seems to avoid the R a bit or does something different with it.
If you can tell what accent he's doing, please write in to Smart Enough to. We think Dan and I think he's doing a New York accent. Tell us if you're from that area of the world. Is it even close?
Hey, I'm an Armenian tourist here in New York.
Prove me wrong. I learned. How did you learn English? I learned it by listening to this podcast called Smart Enough to Know Better with this guy doing a New York accent. Oh, that makes perfect sense then.
Oh dear. You have been listening to Dan at smartenough.org.
You've also been listening for far too long to Greg at smartenough.org.
There's stuff on the website. Go to the website, so smartenough.org. Oh,
so good.
Cool stuff. Make a comment on the page.
Yeah.
That's still happening.
Yep.
That's still happening. If our patrons donate to the podcast, they're great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If they're a second tier patron, then I will thank them very much for their patronage.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a
sentence. Please patronize us.
So a big thank you to A.V. Greenbury, Andrew Chowsdale, Joshua Devlin Moreno, Steve Stewart, Andrew Whitehurst, Matt Ewers, Matthew Toy, Mariana Scott, Ilana Mitchell, Gronya Maguire, Ivan Britta-Rogowski, Elizabeth Youngkin, Lindsay Jenkinson, and Andrew Potts.
Ooh, thank you very much. It's very kind. Very, very crazy kind.
Gronya said that I was doing a good job of her name for someone who's not from Ireland.
Ireland.
If you're a top tier member, then not only do we thank you, but I have to insult you. So these insults are snake related. These insults are thematically snake related.
Is it because in Brisbane at the moment there's just lots of snakes? Well, like it seems to be, everyone's like, "Oh my god, there's snakes in Brisbane!" I just seen a lot of news articles about it, and you're like, "Yes, it's a subtropical area. There's always been snakes, and it's getting warmer, and the snakes have come out." You always seem to forget this. You know, like Londoners forget that how weird and cold and warm that the underground can get. Brisbaneites forget they live in a subtropical area where there's bloody snakes. It's very strange.
Yeah,
not dangerous snakes. They're just pythons. Like, just. If they come into bed with you, they just want to warm up. Just cuddle up against them. They'd be like a little puppy dog that's like scaly. It'd be perfectly fine.
I mean, they're not all pythons.
Most of them are pythons. The ones that are going to climb into bed with you are.
Like a red-belly black or a brown snake or a taipan.
You get a lot of those things in Brisbane, though, do you? Like not in the city.
They happen. Apparently there's some real nasty ones up on Bribie Island just cruising along the beach and biting dogs.
Oh.
Yeah. Brown snakes just. They're not even up in the dunes. They just go down to the. They're like, "Ooh, nice sandy beach."
Yeah, that's nice and warm.
And hey, balls to you, particular dog.
Death. Yeah.
So it happens.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So these insults, snake-based insults.
Yes. Interested.
So Joey Wesley, you give me a tightness in the chest.
Is that a constricting joke?
Yes, that is a constricting joke.
Okay, got it. Okay. Thank you. Good.
Yeah. It's good because, like, your laugh was constricted too. I know.
It was strangled in my throat.
Yeah. Mikhail Kedah, you didn't have a leg to stand on.
Very good. But they did evolve from creatures with legs.
They did.
Then they lost them.
Yep. Steve Eichenhout. Ugh, no fangs. No fangs.
Oh, yeah, I got it. It's very clever.
Yeah, I feel clever.
How's that working out for you?
Good.
Excellent.
Tom Seary.
That'd be the that'd be the perfect end to Fight Club at that moment. It's like, hey, that's real clever. How's that working out for you? No, it's working out really well, thanks. And then Tyler then just vanishes. Like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
He just goes.
He's really mentally stable.
Oh, well, this guy's...
Spoilers for Fight Club, by the way. And finally, Tom Siri. You're no longer welcome in Ireland.
Aww.
Although, admittedly, neither am I after mispronouncing it just moments ago.
There were never snakes in Ireland. It never happened. Come at me, Catholic Church.
Well, they're metaphorical snakes, you know.
No, no, they meant literal snakes and they're whole thing. Oh, well, we didn't, I don't think it is. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think it is. They were like, oh, he got rid of, why don't we have them? Because they're, I'm going to stop doing accents now. Because the saint got rid of them. They were never there. They were never there. They never made it to Ireland. There's no evidence of any sort of snakes in Ireland. It's a whole damn thing. I'm in a mood. Really? This is great.
It is pretty far north. For your torpor induced.
Yeah, there are
reptiles.
Snakes. It's just been separated for a long time. There's no evidence of them there. You want to fight the 45th president of the United States, and I want to fight the Catholic Church. This is good.
I don't want to fight him. Like that would be like a prison brawl, right? Okay, and a big thank you to these well-grounded patrons, Al Batson, Eric Wilson, Michael Barnes, Morden O'Hare, and Scott Driscoll. Thank you all for being top-tier members of the podcast.
Very kind.
Oh, Greg and I are doing a science panel show in Brisbane, and it is already sold out.
It's sold out, yes, that's right.
You've missed out. You've missed your chance. But last year's is available online to watch.
Really?
So if you'd like to watch that... I'm going to put the link in the show notes.
And I'm not in it, so there you go. Two wins on that one, so there you have it.
Oh, but you're going to be in it this year.
I will be in it this year. Very exciting.
It's going to be fun.
Very exciting.
It's going to be lots of fun.
I was quite moved. I haven't been able to do it because I've been living a tenth of the way around the planet. But I got invited for a couple of years, even though I was a tenth away. Were you going to come back, the organizer, the Dr. Joel Gilmore? And then he didn't realize I was back. And when he discovered I was back, he was like, oh, my God, I've got to get him back on. And that was very touching. So, yes, very nice of him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're special.
We are special. Lovely.
So, astute listeners may have noticed something missing from the head of the show. The judgy voice that insists that both Greg and myself are smart enough to know better. That is the voice recorded 12 years ago of my 87-year-old grandfather, Ron Harris. He would foster in me a love of making up stories, singing songs, and telling jokes. Always kind and always thoughtful. The sort of person that represents what we should all aspire to be. He quietly passed away at the age of 99 on the 15th of October on a warm Sunday afternoon, knowing that he was loved. The listeners of this podcast have a lot to thank him for. And as we always like to say,
Gregoire and Dan Beeston are smart enough to know better.
You look dynamic today.
Do I? What
does that mean? Distracted but dynamic. You've got a sort of a silver fox.
Oh, okay.
Thing.
You haven't seen my exciting haircut. This is my exciting haircut. I've had an exciting haircut. My new look. Finally doing kind of what I wanted to do, which has been exciting. So that's
good. It's working. Yeah. It looks like Captain Pike went through a washing machine.
Yeah. Someone said that you look like Captain Pike and Rick Sanchez had a baby. And I was like, I'm okay with that.
That's not too bad.
That's not too bad.
When you shoot for the moon, you land amongst the stars.
That's right. And then you suffocate. Well, if you're shooting for the moon, you probably took enough off. The stars are a lot further away, so you probably didn't take that into account. I have a theory that the reason they can't do hands is because secretly the world's just run by seven-fingered monsters. And we just never realized it before. And they're all fed into the algorithm. It's the algorithm's desperately trying to tell us that you're being run by inhuman creatures that have like weird hands and their faces are like, ah! And you're like,
yeah,
they live.
That sounds like it. That sounds like it. It probably has nothing to do with the fact that hands look like this and it sort of makes a finger and then goes, well, at the end of fingers, other fingers start. And then he goes, at the end of fingers, other fingers tend to start. And the end of fingers, other fingers tend to start. And the end of fingers, other tend to... And it doesn't know how to count. It doesn't know what a finger is. It's just working out what the next bit probably looks like. So it's I would suspect that the fingers that AI shows you is the average amount of fingers in humans, not the medium.
The mean. No, so it's trying to do the mean, not the median.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that makes sense. But I still think my human monster thing is probably right too.
You know, that rings true to me as well. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Maths. The best questions are answered with it's in human monsters.
You can't predict anything with maths.
No. Maths just made by humans, man. Humans are always wrong. Let's just give it a go. See what falls out of this ridiculous thing.
I like that. I'm in a rare good mood. To do this.
Good
mood. No, I usually come to the podcast, you're like, yeah, let's get this done. But I'm like, I'm excited about this one. I got nothing to back that up. Yeah, for some reason I've got a good feeling about this one. Fantastic. No, I'm raising the bar on this one. Like my expectations are very high and I'm ready to be disappointed. That's fantastic. What that is.
Okay. Just like in relationships and life in general.
Yeah. Lots of experience. I'm getting good at getting disappointed.
That's right.
Real good. Unsettlingly good. This can't last. And then I'm going to put in his intro.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Nah, it's awesome. 99. Yeah. Over 99 and a half years. Like, he's basically being greedy.
That's right. And he didn't want a letter from the king. He was like, no, I'm not getting a letter from no king. It's just bullshit.
Yeah. He had his wits about him for a really long time,
too. That's the important part, yeah. That's good. Oh, good on him.
Yep. He got his passport at, like, the age of 95.
To get to heaven.
He'd already been overseas for the war, but apparently he didn't need a passport
then. It's amazing how many customs officials don't stop a platoon of men with guns. We'd like to come into your country, please. Okay.
Well, that's how the problem started, actually. Do you have a pass? They need one guy at the Polish border going, I need to see a passport. It's like, we don't have a...
bring up the passport. That'll do nicely. Come on into Poland. We thought so. Just written in paint, passport on the side of their tank.
All of these ships are coming past your port.